I'm looking on our show notes this week, and it's like, this is kind of old news to me. So I've been off the grid a little bit.
You had an expedition.
I did. Yeah. I feel like it's been 2 weeks because last week we recorded a little bit early and it was the holiday and nothing really happened at the end of last week. And then this week I was on a little trip and, got to see a rocket launch and, which we'll talk a little bit about that later on. But, let's start off with the news because this is really news to me. So I'll react in real time, I suppose. But the first thing I see here is that Apple is dumb on explicit privacy again. What is that?
Yeah, so this week there was a bit of a scandal about that if you turned off every toggle in location services, including when you drill down into the system services and you turn all them off, then people noticed, or this website called Kreb Security noticed, that the location indicator would still flash up from time to time, which was strange because it looked like you turned everything off, but it was still... pinging for location.
Yeah.
And location is a very sensitive subject. And there were a few rumors going around about, or a few ideas going around about what this could be. Maybe it's something to do with a SIM card, or maybe it's something to do with like the U1 chip in the iPhone 11, because people could get it to happen on the iPhone 11, but not earlier models. And the initial response to Kreb Security, Apple replied, an engineer replied, and basically said, "This is expected behavior. Some services require location and not listed in the privacy pane." And
so you can turn off location services like as a gigantic big toggle, right? And that should be everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there are apparently location the features of the system that do not fall under that toggle.
Okay.
Full stop. Regardless of whether you turn everything off one by one or you turn off the big thing at the top. Okay. But the first... Kreb Security was basically like shoved to one side by, Apple product security. And they were like, "This doesn't matter. This is, expected behavior." And then everyone had a bit of a hoo-ha about it because, it's about location. People are very worried about what's happening in the location. Realistically, we expect it to be some kind of system thing. One theory is about SOS, so it knows like the emergency call number. Because if you go into the privacy text screen where you learn more about privacy and security for location services, it would mention that your location will be retained regardless if you are doing a SOS call to find out the emergency services information. But the way that was worded is that it said it would get your location when the call is made.
Right,
and
that makes sense.
No call, nothing was happening here, so it was just kind of out of the blue. So it was a bit of a red mark for a little couple of days, and then on Thursday, Apple, in their brilliant ways, provided a statement to TechCrunch, eschewing Kreb Security entirely, explaining that on the iPhone 11, the ultra-wideband chip has to be enabled in certain regions based on the laws of the local area. So in a few countries, the spectrum that the U1 chip uses is not permitted to be used, so they have to turn it off. And so... that's what the iPhone 11 is doing, that it basically checks your location locally to check if it's in one of the supported areas and then turns the U1 chip on or off. And they have promised that they will fix the concerns in a future update by adding a toggle to disable ultra-wideband completely in that location section. Huh. So if you don't want even the phone just checking what your location is to do like a feature toggle, you'll be able to set that later. Now, realistically... what is the privacy impact of the device just checking what location it's in to turn features on and off? Essentially zero. But it's the, it's the mind space fear that I've just turned all this stuff off and I've read this, eight paragraph explanation of what my location services privacy options are.
Right.
And it's still, defined to a degree. So it's just another example of Apple being a bit sloppy and, realistically there wasn't a privacy breach here or anything, substantial, but it's like it's fear-mongering caused by something that was fully within Apple's control and they just lapsed their eyes again, despite constantly reiterating them as the, privacy first company. Even things like this need to have people double-checking this stuff because it can cause, panic when even if there's nothing substantial beneath it, it's, understandable concern that arises when this stuff is popping up and you don't know what's happening.
Yeah, you don't want to give people who have serious concerns more reason to be worried, and sort of feed paranoia.
Yeah, and like, you know, Apple's doing these repeated ads and these white papers, privacy, 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 security, 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 and then you just have like basic blunders of this little thing flashing up when it shouldn't be like that. That anything that can check or your location for any reason should be carefully monitored by, you know, Apple's internal processes and either be controlled by the overall toggles or have detailed explanation in the settings as to why it must be required, like the emergency SOS thing. If it had said your location will also be used for checking if, you know, ultra wideband can be enabled in this area, then this wouldn't have been an issue in the first place. But that kind of documentation just wasn't there, and that should be, you know, drilled into Apple's rollout of anything, right? Like, document it, add a toggle where necessary, and move on. And these stupid little flare-ups just wouldn't happen. It's just, you know, them just being a bit silly.
And the way to detect it was that you could see the sort of like compass arrow in the status bar. That, you know, it's funny because, you know, there's no like hardware indicator that says location's being used. You don't have like a big light that comes on or something. So for this to be an accident in that regard, but then it still triggers the icon for your location's being used, that does give you faith that icon is pretty honest, at least.
Yeah, it must be doing something, right?
Right. Well. Okay. Then there's that's location. The big thing that I did sort of follow as it was unfolding was the some big news from Ming-Chi Kuo on this fall's iPhones. Is that right?
It's kind of, yeah. So this fall was in 2020 and kind of spreading into 2021 as well.
Okay. So the next, you know,
it's quite a big report.
Next couple of cycles of iPhones, which is characteristic of Kuo. When there's big changes coming, then there's a big report to include those.
And this report kind of covers a shift in like the iPhone strategy, which is also backed up by a JP Morgan analyst this week. Who kind of came, he said it on like Monday or Tuesday, that was basically our supply chain checks indicate that from 2021, Apple will change the way that the iPhone comes out in the year. So, you know, since the iPhone 4S in October of 2011, the new flagship iPhone models have always come out in the fall, and typically that's September, right? And what the Morgan analyst suggested was that from 2021, Apple will switch to a model where they have some flagship iPhones coming out in like the first half of the year and then the other flagships in the fall period. So they'd be kind of smoothing over the, oh, everything happens at one time in September, and shifting more to a rollout strategy that is closer to like Samsung, where they have two kind of flagship lines of iPhone or of smartphone, where they have the Galaxy S series and the Galaxy Note series. And the Note always comes out in like the fall time, and then the S update comes, the Galaxy S line comes out in like February, March timeframe. And so what JP Morgan suggested is that Apple was slowly transitioning to something similar to that, where they'd have, you know, a major iPhone splash earlier in the year and then a major iPhone splash later in the year. Now, that was just an analyst report from JP Morgan. So, you know, we covered it, but it was still very much up in the air. Now, Kuo is basically backing that up with a lot more detail. So for 2020, we've already heard that the iPhone sizes are changing. So there's going to be the 5.4-inch phone, the 6.1-inch phone, and the 6.7-inch phone, and they'll be all OLED models. What Kuo says in this week's report is that there'll also be a second 6.1-inch model, which will also be OLED. So there'll be four OLED models next year. And the way it splits up is that the 5.4-inch and the 6.1-inch will exist just with dual cameras on the back. So, like the iPhone 11 today, right? Mm-hmm. And then there'll be a 6.1-inch and a 6.7-inch model that have the triple camera system, and they have the new 3D sensing time of flight thing, which is going to, you know, detect basically what Face ID does on the front. It'll be do that on the rear camera for object detection, augmented reality circumstances, things like that. So you'd essentially have, I guess, what would be the new Pro lines would be the 6.1-inch OLED and the 6.7-inch OLED, because they'll have the triple cameras and time of flight. And then you have like two variants of the non-pro line, which is 5.4 inches and 6.1 inches. And before this week, we didn't know about the existence of the extra 6.1 inch model.
Right.
So we were kind of seeing like the 5.4 inch model as the new iPhone 11 Pro, like along the iPhone XS line, not the Max line, right? So mm-hmm. the screen size might be shrinking down from 5.8 to 5.4, but now it more seems like the two top spec models will be 6.1 and 6.7.
So in this case, it's confusing because there's more phones than ever in the situation. In this lineup that we're looking at, you get rid of LCD as a factor, so the screens are all the same, but the screen sizes are different. And so you differentiate between screen size and then the number of cameras. And unlike right now where you've got a phone in the middle that costs the least and has the fewest cameras, a phone on the bottom in terms of size and a phone at the top in terms of size has the most cameras and costs the most, it is like it looks like it would be priced by screen size. And then in the middle, there's some overlap. There's the same screen size, but one's got more camera than the other one has.
Yeah. So obviously in this current iteration, the 2019 iteration, the iPhone 11 Pro is 5.8 inches and then the iPhone 11 is 6.1, but the iPhone 11's, you know, $300 cheaper. Whereas next year, the Pro models will also have the biggest screens, although there'll also be a non-Pro model that has the same size screen. So it's kind of realigning it in that way, but it's complicated because now you're getting the differentiation between the time of flight sensor as well as the raw like photo cameras.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's definitely not like a direct parallel to this year or last year.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, forging a new direction, and the kind of expansion of the line feeds into the kind of 2021 stuff where they start, you know, breaking up more. Obviously, all of these OLED phones will have 5G in some capacity. Quo says that they might disable certain bandwidths of the 5G modems in the iPhones in certain countries which don't have much 5G service, or their 5G service is very, very shallow in terms of distribution, because mm-hmm. apparently it costs Apple less money if they turn off the radios but still ship the modem in the chip.
Okay.
So that's what Quo says anyway. So there must be some like licensing deal with Qualcomm where if you buy like the modem that supports 5G but you don't use the 5G element of it, it's cheaper. And presumably those would go into the, you know, the models which don't have the time of flight cameras, so the lower end ones. So maybe in the US everything's turned on, but if you go to, you know, parts of Europe which are having a slower 5G rollout, or like India or something, where 5G is not going to be pervasive this time next year, they're going to turn it off anyway. So all of the models will have 5G chips inside them, but they might not be active in every country, in every market.
Yeah.
But it seems like he says, the sub 6G and millimeter wave supporting iPhone will launch in 5 markets, including the US, Canada, Japan, Korea and the UK. Mm-hmm. And that will be, so the most compatible 5G iPhone next year will be in about 5 countries based on the current estimates.
Okay. Yep.
And then alongside that, you have the iPhone SE situation, which is still going to be LCD phones, right? So as reported before, there's going to be the new iPhone SE 2 in early 2020, which will look like an iPhone 8 but have an A13 chip inside it. And this is where it gets a bit crazy. Right. So if you look into the 2021 timeframe, Quo says that there will be an iPhone SE 2 Plus,
okay,
which will be 5.5 inches or between 5.5 inches and 6.1 inches. So kind of similar to the old form factor of like the iPhone 8 Plus. In addition to the 4.7 inch LCD one, But the SE 2 Plus will probably be all screen design.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
So not the 2020 one, but the 2021 one. He says this model will adopt a full screen design. The notch area will be smaller because it won't have Face ID, and the Touch ID sensor will be integrated into the power button on the side.
Hmm.
So it's kind of crazy that you're going to have the SE 2 in 2021, so not even next year, the year after, they're going to re-engineer Touch ID to put it on the side power button to enable a full screen, you know, thin bezel SE 2 Plus.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, there's concurrent rumors that the, you know, the Pro iPhones, the higher end models, will adopt Touch ID in the form of under the screen fingerprint scanners.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. Well, I mean, that's crowded. It's not unlike, you look at the iPad line, that's very crowded, and the different methods are you know, for Touch ID or Face ID across the line. There are a lot of models there, screen sizes, product name, specs. Same for the Mac, even though the Mac line makes the most sense. It has in years now. I guess it's not crazy for the iPhone line to get this wild. It just, like, my first reaction to hearing all this in detail after being away for the, you know, last few days is that it sounds like everything that's been rumored for the past few years that didn't happen is happening in some form, factor, or the other.
Just not necessarily in the product that you expect it would have gone in.
Yeah.
Like, Touch ID in the side button, like the power button, was a thing when we were rumoring the iPhone X.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because back then there were some thoughts that it was going to be under the screen. There are other people saying, oh, it's just going to be in the side button, because an Android phone had come out with Touch ID in the power button at that time. And obviously this is the 2017 time frame, but apparently it's going to return for real in 2021. So the SE for next year will be the boring one, which looks like the iPhone 8, but then the SE, if you know, quote unquote SE, who knows what they'll call it, but the LCD phone essentially in 2021 will be an all screen design. And this feeds into the split up into summer and fall, because what's Quo saying is you'll have the LCD iPhone launches in the first half of the year, and then you have the OLED phone launches in the second half of the year. And it would seem like the LCD SE 2 Plus might be considered more of a flagship than like what the, you know, what the SE, what we generally refer to the SE as, like the side model. And obviously they've come out in the spring before, right? So that's not unusual. But they're not really regarded as like top tier phones, whereas what the 2021 phone would be, it'd be more like how the iPhone 11 sits in the lineup today, right? Where it's not the top spec, but it's decent enough that a lot of people buy it. And I think that's what they're positioning for that 2021 5.5 inch, 6.1 inch LCD phone, because it will be full screen. So it will look mostly like the rest of the lineup, but rather than having Face ID, it'll have biometrics in the side button.
Yeah, my head is spinning.
Yeah, it's a complicated situation.
Yes, yes. And you know, it helps to have graphics like the original report had. But then not having product names for these things and having to reference them by like when they may come out and screen size.
Yeah, and it's so
specs.
Diverse from what we know. It's hard to even like invent names that would correspond to anything.
Right,
value,
there aren't
right?
parallels.
Like, yeah, because we can call the OLED iPhones the iPhone 12s for the time being. But the 2021 situation might see like a completely different like arc of the phone being like you might need like a sub brand to separate the early models and the later models, kind of like how Samsung has Galaxy and Note, right?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a thing. We all know that a VPN protects your privacy and security, but what you can also do is use a VPN to evade geographic content blocks and access movies and TV shows that simply aren't available to you in your country normally, but are to someone else, somewhere else in the world. Use ExpressVPN to change your location. Not literally, but when you connect to ExpressVPN, you can choose the physical location of the server, so you can appear to be from somewhere else to sites like Netflix, Hulu, iPlayer, YouTube, the list goes on and on. Are you in the US and you want to watch Doctor Who or something like Blackadder? Well, you can fire up ExpressVPN, set your location to the UK, and you can see the same content library that I do when you use Netflix. ExpressVPN hides your IP address and lets you control where you want sites to think you are located. You can choose from almost 100 different countries. There are so many VPNs out there, but ExpressVPN stands apart as being ridiculously fast. You can stream HD video without any buffering or lag whilst proxying over their connection. You can use ExpressVPN across all of your devices, from iPhone to Android to games consoles, smart TVs, and so much more. You can watch what you want on the go, on the big screen, wherever you are in the world. If you use our special link right now, that's expressvpn.com/happyhour, you can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. Support the show, watch what you want, and protect yourself online. Go to expressvpn.com/happyhour to get started. And then, if you want the real kicker, So among the high-end 2021 models, Quo says Apple will drop the Lightning port and replace it with nothing to provide a completely wireless, port-free iPhone experience.
That's what people want. They hate that port. They hate being able to plug things into it and do stuff. The professionals hate that.
So by 2021, do you think we'd be in a position to go port-free?
I mean, you can go port-free on, you know, you can live port-free now as long as you don't do certain things, like connect things. You know, you can only charge wirelessly. You can have wireless CarPlay, or CarPlay may be niche, so you can have Bluetooth audio in the car where you're only playing over, you know, the built-in Bluetooth in your car. Charging wirelessly in the car is a thing, but it's not built in as much as just like having a port in your car is, and it's not as
fast. Then wireless CarPlay is a thing as much as that as well. Like, it's only in a very, very few cars at the moment.
Right. Yeah.
To wired CarPlay.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, man, AirDrop is a good thing. So people use that heavily. From, you know, this past week, I went to a NASA social sort of, got to go see a rocket launch at the Kennedy Space Center. And it's a bunch of people, you know, like me with an audience and something that isn't space. And we're all taking pictures and videos, and like, you know, we're all in the pictures of, you know, with each other. And so AirDrop was like, it was one of those times where we talk about having the, you know, where you aim and you see the person in front of you as the top of the mm-hmm. list. It's like, oh, this could be kind of useful there. But because there's so many people who are just AirDropping stuff. But like, but also, I mean, something as simple as like the smart battery case, that's a wired accessory. You know what I mean? I mean, it attaches to the phone, but yeah. It plugs in from the bottom. So sure, you could do it. And you can always use the top end phone as like the experimental, you know, this is the future. There's no home button on this phone now, and it affords us this other thing. But if it's like the headphone jack where it's like, not really sure what it affords you, you know, maybe it'll make sense later on. Then you'll just get used to it. That's all right. But I would, you know, if I were guessing, I think we've had this talk. You know, a lot of people in the community have this talk before of like, will the iPhone go to USB-C? And I'm sure that we've mentioned on the show before, like, it's not a guarantee that if it's not Lightning, that it's USB-C. It could be that if it's not Lightning, it's nothing. So this isn't like unheard of, unimaginable. We've imagined it.
Yeah.
But it's also like if I was just picking my preference of like what's the most utilitarian thing, like what gets me the most utility, I'd just say, oh, throw USB-C on it, not Lightning. it's more pro. So this is not that.
Yeah, I mean, what do people use the Lightning port for today, really? They use it for power because, you know, a lot of people don't use wireless charging pads. I don't really that often. I like just being able to charge faster through the port, and I just feel more comfortable with it. I don't know. Cheap pads annoy me. I don't know why. Then you have headphones, right? So people that don't use AirPods, they use the headphone. Like we've discussed before, about a huge proportion of people who have iPhones just use the headphones that come in the box. So at the moment, the headphones come in the box are Lightning earbuds, and you probably have CarPlay as like the third biggest thing people plug into the iPhone nowadays,
which isn't huge, but it's growing.
Yeah, but it's got to be like, I can't think of anything bigger.
Yeah,
right.
The past few days, I was using my iPhone to take pictures and my Sony RX100 to take pictures, like, you know, point and shoot camera. And it's got an SD card, and they make a Lightning to SD card adapter, so that I can like pop the card out. But I didn't do that. I did the thing where you connect over like direct Wi-Fi and transfer the pictures that way to the phone, and that. You know, I wasn't even thinking about like this in that context of like, what if there's no port? That was just what I did for the sake of like not having to pull the card out and use an adapter. It's not that smooth with a Mac. If it was, then I'd be happy. Yeah. You know, and less irritated with no SD card slot on the Macs. But in that area, I wasn't even thinking about what if there's no port in the future, and I was doing the thing that you would do in that situation.
Yeah, so it's definitely like charging, and then the boxed audio is by far the biggest two use cases. Then you have like CarPlay, you know, further away, right? Yeah. If you're imagining like the scale of it. And Power obviously does have a solution in terms of Qi charging, but the inefficiency of Qi charging is kind of annoying, and it makes it unsuitable for use cases like the smart battery case, like you said. So that's a kind of an outlier at the moment. For the audio situation, well, you could just put AirPods. Like, Apple could just bundle AirPods in the highest end model in 2021, and that would solve that thing, right? Because then the headphones that you come in the box are wireless, so you don't have to worry about the port situation. Like, if AirPods were bundled in the box today, nobody would be plugging in Lightning earphones to the iPhone anyway. So that problem is surmountable. It just requires, you know, Apple like stomaching some of the money that they like selling by selling AirPods on their own. And then you have the CarPlay situation. So maybe there could be a dongle, which is like a wireless dongle. like you could plug. So where you'd plug in the Lightning port, you'd plug in like this second accessory, which kind of talks over a radio frequency to the phone.
Oh, like, kind of like what I can imagine is like, you know, I've got a wireless printer and it does have input wirelessly. You know, the scanner function is that you can put a piece of paper on it and scan that and then wirelessly send that to your computer. You know what I mean? Where,
yeah, it's or like I'm thinking of what was that thing called in macOS? Remote disk, right? When mm-hmm. they took away the optical drive from all the way back then,
yeah,
they let you basically proxy another computer on your network CD drive. So if you had like a little adapter that stood on its own that was essentially a Lightning port plug, and you how you plug your phone into the car, you plug this like secondary dongle in instead, and then somehow you power the dongle, it's battery powered or something, and then essentially the data flow from the phone rather than going through a cable would just fly wirelessly over there to the adapter and then goes back in and sorts out the wired CarPlay situation. How simple is that compared to plugging the wire? But there's probably ways around it, right? You can probably make a dongle if you have to.
Like, well, that's almost like in my car where I've tried for years to have my watch work with Bluetooth in the car, and they have something that like in the product name is dongle, and it shows up in Bluetooth as dongle, and what it's supposed to do is take audio from the watch, play it to that adapter, and then do input, you know, like aux in, and then play it to the stereo. It doesn't work because it's not good, but that's the same idea.
Yeah, because I think it would be optimistic to say that by 2021, wireless CarPlay is pervasive, because, you know, it's almost 2020 now and we're not seeing much traction in that area, really. But at least there are probably like workarounds you can imagine if you try hard enough to, you know, hack it together if it needs to be. And, you know, what is the 3.5mm Lightning dongle at the end of the day? It's a dumb hack. So they're certainly not averse to doing that. And like you say, if it is isolated to the highest end model only, then, you know, they're hedging. Like, they're giving you the future phone if you want it, and then the rest of the lineup can just carry on having ports for a while. So I guess it's fine. It's just, this is like, it's funny that we're going to skip USB-C entirely for the iPhone. Because even if you think, if they're only going to take it off the high-end model in 2021, then Lightning will be around in 2023, 2024. Like, it will take a while for it to go down the line, right, and actually die off. So
kind of reminds me,
from that perspective, the Lightning ecosystem is going to be around for, you know, many years, yeah.
And it kind of reminds me of the 12-inch MacBook with one USB-C port, where that was a thing, and that was like, you know, the future direction, but then that went away, and now there's no MacBook with that one port. And like, the one port equivalent on a MacBook is like no port on iOS, because iOS, you know, iPhones always had one port. And so if you're gonna go to the bare minimum, then it's zero, I suppose. And like, if you were describing a product that's like, it's the iPhone Air, and there's the Pro, which has USB-C port, and there's the Air, and it's got no port, but because of the no port, we can do different, you know, there and some of the features that just aren't there, then we can make this super light and portable thing, like, you know, as we make the other phones thicker than they even are today to have more battery life and power and everything. But this isn't that. This is doing it on the Pro series, which fits in when you look at what they did with the iPhone X, no home button, big radical redesign there. I could see this changing over the years. Like, you know, they could always go back if it's terrible.
Yeah, and could be a bridge too far. Having four other models in 2021 that will still have Lightning ports.
Yeah,
so people wanting new iPhones with ports can still get it, I guess.
They have pulled off no ports on the Apple Watch and the Apple TV 4K, right?
Yeah, although that causes problems for them when you know the firmware
the
breaks
HomePod.
And have to get the phone replaced. Yeah. Like all the current portless devices are lower volume than what the iPhone would be. So like if the iPhone, if you had an iOS update that bricked your phone, which has happened before, and your only way to get it fixed would be to go to Apple support, the strain on Apple's support chain would be way higher than when the HomePod bricked or when the Apple TVs brick from time to time.
Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, maybe there's, like, maybe they can develop something that will, like, if, you know, like, how the, because obviously the watch is portless, but it does have the hidden port, right? Like, so maybe there's something they could do there where you could still do some kind of user servicing or, you know, just flashing the firmware that maybe is, like, hidden. Or, like, you, when you pop out the SIM card tray, you can, like, plug something in there if you really have to get it done remotely. Like, I'm sure they're thinking these kind of ways to not, you know, have the only option be return it to Apple and wait 3 to 5 days while we, you know, flash it in our factory.
So backup iPhone.
I think the biggest surprise in this report are the Lightning situation, but because it's 2021, it feels less because we've imagined the portless situation before, mm-hmm. and because it's still far away, it's harder to like get your grip on. I think the most surprising thing to me is the idea of the 2021 SE2 that's all screen but doesn't use Face ID and uses another variant of Touch ID. That's the one that's like most out of left field from my point
yeah,
of view.
Yeah, we've never imagined a new phone with no camera. They did that with an iPod once and then they went the other way with it. But Lightning, we have imagined that going away, there being no charging port, no data port, that it's all wireless. That does fit in with what's possible. It would not be possible to do a phone with no speaker, no microphone, no camera. Like those are not things that are on the table. But the port is makes sense. Even if it's
and,
risky.
And I will point out that the photo that Quo uses still depicts the 2020 iPhones as having essentially the same notches and front design as what we're used to today. Mm. Right. So he says that the body will look like an iPhone 4, but I don't think he's going much further in terms of like the notch getting smaller or anything like that at this point in time, at least.
Yeah, I guess the thing to wrap up on this is that no matter what's coming, no matter what like a cluster of just information this all is, it won't be another revision of the iPhone X with just like differences in screen sizes as we've had for the last couple of years. It'll be a lot of different things are happening.
Yeah, it will have a physically different chassis, not just a change in materials, but it will be boxier and similar to the iPhone 4.
Yeah, it won't feel like the 6 to the 6S to the 7 to the 8. It's going to be like a lot of different things are happening here. Okay.
Yeah, and obviously Apple's going to push hard on the 5G train for sales as well.
Hmm.
We've all read some surprising online reviews. Whether you're trying to get a sweet deal on something you've been saving for or trying to find the best happy hour in town, it's generally a good idea to read the reviews first. So why should finding the right software for your business be any different? Read thousands of real software reviews and find the right software for your business at Capterra.com/happy hour. Not familiar with Capterra? Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solutions for your business. With over 1 million reviews of products from real software users, discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Search more than 700 categories covering the entire range of business needs, from project management to email marketing, to even something like running your own yoga studio. No matter what kind of software you're looking for to get your business off the ground, or to simply optimize existing workflows, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution, and fast. How do you get started? Go to capterra.com and drill down into a subcategory like app design, home building, insurance, or banking. It's completely free to look around and explore what's available. Don't troll the web with endless Google searches. Capterra brings everything together into one simple-to-browse directory. Join the millions of people who use Capterra each month to find the right tools for their business. Visit capterra.com/happy hour for free today. Find the tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Capterra.com/happy hour. That's Capterra spelled C-A-P-T-E-R-R-A. .com/happy hour. Capterra, software selection simplified.
Well, I don't know what to call this, but Apple had their award ceremony, and then they did their press release, and it seems that we've sort of had the right read on the story where CNBC had announced that there's going to be this Apple event about apps, and then Lance Ulanoff had the tweet with the image of it, and then nothing ever happened after that. What did happen after that?
Yeah, so what we expected, which is kind of like a press briefing, a private press briefing, to talk about their picks for the best apps of the year, is essentially what happened. They had a space in New York where they invited a load of media over to talk to developers. They had like little demos of all the apps that had been picked, and that was about it. Obviously, then they had the usual press releases and features in the App Store. The picks for this year, what's kind of funny is that with so much effort they gave to like bring all the press out and to make like a thing of it, at least for media briefings, I feel like the enthusiasm around the choices of the apps they picked is kind of like worse than normal. I looked at this list of apps and it kind of felt very, like, very predictable, if you know what I mean. Like, there wasn't anything that was like super out there or was like, oh, you know, I'd never heard of that before, apart from maybe the Apple TV app of the year, which is just like screensavers that aren't actual screensavers. I don't know.
I like the Watch app of the year. That was a good one.
Oh yeah, the Watch app of the year is fantastic. Like, how is this possible? The first year that they make such a big deal of an App Store native on the Watch, the new framework for developing Watch apps with Swift UI. They made a huge big deal about independent Watch apps and Watch OS 6. And then in the best apps of the year, they can't name a single app, a single Watch app at all. Like, what? They pick an Apple TV app, but they can't pick a Watch app.
Yeah, just take something from the keynote of this is Watch OS 6, and these are what some new apps can be able to do, like stream radio over the internet. Like, pick one of those as like the Watch of the
year. You could do an offline podcast app. Yeah. You could do anything, like, even Auto Sleep, right? Which is like they also released just their like top list of apps by downloads.
Sure, yeah.
And one of the top like 20, I think it was in top 10 even, or maybe top 5, was Auto Sleep.
Oh, nice.
And like, you know, at the end of the day, that's a Watch thing. So you could at least give that a shout out, even if you're going to Sherlock it next year. You know, you're not there yet. Like, I don't know. It just felt like a bit weird that they invited press over and then they basically just did the same thing they always do, plus the picks themselves not being very interesting. Like, if you compare the App Store Best of 2019 awards to the Apple Design Awards that they gave out at WWDC in June, the choices they picked for the WWDC stuff are way more diverse, creative, unusual, not from like big name developers or people that you expect. Like, all of the games they pick for the best of 2019 are just like ports of console games that everyone knew would win anyway. Like, I don't know. I feel like if they're going to make a big deal out of it, then they also need to back up the awards with more oomph as well. And I have the same kind of complaint about the Apple Music Awards, which are, you know, they've done stuff like best artists and top songs and stuff before, whether it's branding of the iTunes or Apple Music. But now they're kind of like formalizing it into Apple Music Awards of the Year. They have a really cool like physical trophy award that they give out to the winners, which is like, it looks really cool, and it's made of like the same silicon. It's made of like A12 silicon, but in a big disc, and it's like 12 inches wide. And I think it's like a throwback to 12-inch vinyl discs. And then it's like, you know, surrounding aluminium or whatever. Like, the physical awards are really cool.
It reminds me of like a pop filter on a microphone.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to have one of those awards. I think it looks really cool. But the actual awards they give out, you know, they're making Big Song and Dance. These are the Apple Music Awards 2019. But they have a total of 5 awards. 2 of the awards are just the most streamed song and the most streamed album. And then the other ones, Global Artist of the Year, Songwriter of the Year, and Breakthrough Artist of the Year. And just to highlight like the lack of diversity here, 3 of the 5 awards are won by the same person, Billie Eilish, right? And nothing wrong against Billie Eilish, actually, like some of the music. But if like Apple Music as a service makes such a big drama and point about, you know, every song in the world, 60 million songs, we've got all of these eclectic playlists, all of these different moods, all of these different genres, and then they do their first big like awards ceremony essentially, and they have 5 awards. Like, they don't have any respect for any of the other genres of music. It's just, it felt like a very meager attempt for the first time around.
Mm. It's one step up from the press release, right?
Yeah, and they did do a celebratory concert. Essentially, they had Eilish do a performance at the Steve Jobs Theater, which they live streamed on Apple Music, and you can obviously watch the video on replay. And I think there was an interview with Oliver Schuster, who's like the head of Apple Music now, earlier in the year, and he said something to the effect of, we want to make like Apple Music have more event moments and make music like an event where people can come together. And I think part of that is a new focus on live streaming. So this is like their first one with Eilish, where they made a big deal out of it. I think you're going to see a lot more of that going into next year, where they're live streaming concerts, they're live streaming private things, as well as releasing, you know, the videos afterwards as well. They want to make people like come together at one time and like interact and stuff,
mm-hmm.
which is cool. But the Apple Music Awards 2019, I just kind of feel like more effort was put into making the physical awards and like picking the winners. Like you can have more than 5 awards, and I hope when they do this again in 2020, there's at least better acknowledgement of like more genres, or even like they could take advantage of like the Apple Music platform by having awards picked by different hosts of Beats One, for instance. Like you could have Zane Lowe, the Zane Lowe Award, or you know, or the best Beats One show of the year, or the best lyrics, because then they could do a tie-in with real-time sing-along, you know, sing-along lyrics and stuff. Like there's a lot more scope, and what they did was like give 2 awards to top album, top stream, and then picked 3 artists that, you know, everyone kind of knows, right? Which is fine, like, and that's certainly part of it, but you'd hope that if this was the actual award ceremony, people would just laugh it off because it's, you know, it's not fully featured enough. And I hope that when it returns and they do Apple Music Awards 2020, you know, they can acknowledge a lot more of the user base than, you know, just the mainstream stuff.
Yeah, as they dive into, you know, all this kind of goes back to like the Beats acquisition, where they have this you know, culture company in the LA area where it can be all about entertainment and it doesn't have to be like the iPhone company in Cupertino. And this can all be under that umbrella. But then with TV Plus, you know, then they've got these events with movie stars, and they could have that same sort of, this is a, what do you call it, the front, when they had like the TV show reveals, like
up front.
So like that's, yeah, that's now an event format that they will hopefully need to repeat every year. They could do that same approach for music and have events with music, and it's an Apple event, and but it's not like a product event. It's just like the upfronts would be, you know, if in the future those are separate from, you know, news about the Apple Card or Apple Arcade and some things like that. So it can make sense, but this was just like very small scale. It was just like, this is now, we're sort of like semi-formalizing this, and it's just a step up from a press release, but not much more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of scope for them to do more, but they didn't, you know, pull through on it this time.
Yeah, good preview though of things to come, maybe.
Hiring these days takes time. Time that you just often don't have. Sometimes filling out a role is urgent. Filling a role with a quality candidate that is truly meant for your business, that is. But how do you do it? It isn't as simple as putting an ad in the newspaper or posting to a job board. This is where LinkedIn Jobs comes in. It's the best place to post your job. Get up and running from the LinkedIn Jobs dashboard. Simply start with your company name, job title, and location. Education and grades are important, but LinkedIn also considers qualities like collaboration, work ethic, and adaptability. LinkedIn Jobs finds people that are not only qualified, but fit in with your company's culture. LinkedIn does the legwork to find the most qualified candidates so you can focus on hiring the person who will transform your business. It looks beyond the work skills and connects you with candidates who match your business perfectly. LinkedIn makes sure your job post gets in front of the people that you want to hire. It's no wonder a person is hired every 8 seconds on LinkedIn. And companies rated LinkedIn Jobs the number one hiring platform for delivering quality hires. Find the right person for your business today with LinkedIn Jobs. You can pay what you want and get the first $50 off. Just visit linkedin.com/happyhour. Again, that's linkedin.com/happyhour to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply. Thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring Happy Hour.
All right, Mayo, now for the things that I know about that happened in the past 10 days or so. I'll kind of go through the list in just the order that we've got in the notes from preparation. But I ran my 5th half marathon at the Stennis Space Center near where I live in South Mississippi. And I haven't yet put up the write-up on this, but I want to do another race recap like I've done, you know, I guess for each of these now. And it's kind of fun because this time, you know, I did one a few weeks ago at Disney, and I had a very specific sort of like mode that the Apple Watch Series 5 was going to be in, which included cellular on, and I was streaming music that wasn't synced to the watch. And so, you know, that's battery intensive. And because of that preparation, I decided to have not just the always on display off, but the whole display off with theater mode, right? So you have to tap it to see what's there.
Right. Yeah.
And I got through the race with like plenty of battery. I think I forget. I got the number in the post, but, this time I wanted to have always on, turned on for the duration of the race, which for me is like, you know, about 2.5 hours right now and, of running. And so, because I wanted to have always on turned on, I made sure to have my music sync. So they're the two variables in testing this time, is that I had my music sync locally, but I, you know, so that's good for battery. But then I had the always on display, you know, lit the whole time. And, it, you know, cut to the chase, I ended up, race about 2.5 hours and I think like 2 hours and 20 minutes or so, but, ended up, I think with like 8% battery left, which I never checked it throughout the race, but I was happy that it ended with enough battery. You know, that was good. And there was a surprise element in all of this, which is that, you know, there's HomeKit Secure Video now where you can have alerts based on people detection or animal detection or vehicle detection. And the camera in my front yard only has people detection, but we've decorated for Christmas, and the inflatable Santa has been alerting me whenever no one's home that a person's been detected. And I knew, like, I tweeted about this because it's like, you know, haha, it's kind of funny. But then I guess just like people had been home since then, and I just hadn't been, you know, where no one's home, and I've been getting spam these alerts. And so on race day, no one was home. We were all at the race, and I got like 30 notifications about inflatable Santa, you know, triggering the camera alert. So
that's funny.
Yeah. So I think like after 20 alerts in a row, I was just dismissing them because I thought this is the last one. And it's just finally I did D&D and just had no more alerts, but the screen was still on and everything. So that was like,
is the Santa in a position where you could have done motion zones if you wanted to?
Yeah. Yeah. If that was a feature.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So,
by the way, this week we also saw that the NetAtmo indoor camera got beta support for HomeKit Secure Video.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were talking about like, the fact that for the Logitech camera, you have to go on a completely separate firmware and be disconnected from anything else.
It's pulled out of the app, right?
Yeah. For the NetAtmo situation, you don't. It's just like an add-on feature.
Does NetAtmo, does that use their own SD card for storage? I think the outdoor one does. I'm sure the indoor one does too.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But it also turns out that it wasn't supposed to go live this week. It's like a private beta everyone's supposed to be quiet about, but it happened.
Okay. Well, yeah. So this time for the race, that was a big experiment, was to see, you know, what kind of battery life can I get with always on turned on. And there's one more in a few weeks, and you know, this next one, this will be my sixth half marathon so far, and eventually I'll try the marathon, but I'm not crazy enough yet. But I ran with a friend of mine, Jacob, who was on my Watch Time podcast on episode 2. And so if you're interested, you can hear him talk about his marathon experience there. But also my wife, Kelsey, ran for the first time in the half marathon. And so we had 3 Apple Watch Series 5, you know, models to sort of like poll and say, what were your modes that you had? And my wife had, I think she had cellular on and her music was synced. And she had more battery than me, and she's got a smaller watch than me. She's got the smaller size, but that just, I think the difference there is probably how much I was like checking my watch. I checked Find My Friends or Find My for Friends once or twice. And then those like 30 notifications were kind of relentless.
Santa screwed you over.
Yeah. Inflatable Santa. And, it's actually an inflatable minion from Despicable Me next to Santa. But man, I need to just move that for and away from the camera. That'll solve that problem. And then with Jacob, he had his music synced, and it's a Series 5, 44 millimeter, but he had cellular off and he had like 50% battery remaining. And we all finished within like 6 minutes of each other. So it was like the same race duration. So for this next one, it's a week from this Sunday. I guess it'll be the first one that I do without cellular since the Series 3 existed. And I won't bring my phone. I'll just have the, you know, you can turn cellular on if you need it, if you're in that situation, but I'm just going to try that and see, like, you know, music is on the watch. I'm streaming it to to AirPods, or in this case, I actually decided I went for a run on Thanksgiving Day and I was like, I used AirPods Pro. And I thought about it. And I'm like, I'm going to use the Power Beats Pro again for this next race. And I've settled in there that AirPods Pro are like my daily earphones, but Power Beats Pro are like the race earphones because the buttons.
What's the difference? Why? Like, why did you do it?
So you don't have noise cancellation or transparency on the Power Beats Pro. You really can't simulate transparency. You just have to take them out of your ears to like hear around you in the situation. So that's okay. And I do that. But the Node noise, reduction stuff, that noise cancellation, it's okay because I think the sound's just better on the Power Beats Pro and you can adjust them better. I can adjust them better in my ears to get like a better sound than I can out of AirPods Pro. They're just not convenient for everyday use, you know, but for battery life, like they had like 75% or 80% battery after the race was over. So that was a non issue. But then,
I keep forgetting that the Power Beats Pro have
nine,
you know, on one charge, their battery life's like double. Well,
yeah, AirPod will give you 9 instead of 4.5. But just like it's the fit in my ears, and both my left and right ear, they have a different fit where I'm using the largest tip on both of the AirPods Pro. The medium one, the default one, works. The smallest one doesn't. That's the only one that'll fail the tip fit test, whatever it's called. And because it's like they're way too small. But the ear sizes, I think if I could like have it custom made, it would be large on the right side and like extra large on the left side because it still feels kind of loose. And I'm adjusting them a lot, especially to get, you know, the right like sound and fit for to make that sound happen. And with Power Beats Pro, it's like you kind of roll them back in your ears and you get the kind of fit that you're looking for. But then also having the buttons for, you know, changing the volume up and down is really useful. So those are my like race day earphones. It's been settled. But yeah, this next one in a week, I'm going to try and run without cellular on. And, you know, the only thing I'll kind of give up there is, you know, no encouraging messages, no ability to stream music. It's got to be on the watch. And then like no location sharing. But now that I'm getting more of my friends and family to run the races too, we're all kind of in the race anyway, and we end up at the finish line, you know, when we do. So, but I really want to see, you know, how with that scenario, where does the battery life end up at? So,
and you won't get Santa annoying you if you've got cellular disabled.
Yeah, no, Santa and the minion can't bother me. So that's the race stuff. And that was the Stennis Space Center half marathon. So it's like, it's on a, you know, NASA Space Center, and it's mostly just running through the like paved roads through the woods, and there's some like NASA stuff that you can see from the route, but it's not a very active place for that. It's a lot of weather stuff now. But then a few days later, I got to go to the Kennedy Space Center through an official NASA social event where I applied for it, and they were looking for people with like large audiences that weren't space related specifically. And so I applied as like, I have an Apple audience, you know, behind me. And, I got to go to that, and it was a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket launch. And so SpaceX leases the launch pad from NASA, and then NASA wants to promote like everything that they're doing and then show you the launch too. And, that was really cool. Like I learned a lot about what's happening there that I did not know. And I'll do a story next week on just like, these are the pictures that I took with the iPhone and share that. I did buy the smart battery case for the iPhone 11 Pro Max on the way, 'cause I stopped at an Apple store in Jacksonville, Florida, just to like see it and take a, you know, walk from driving so far. And I walked out with the smart battery case and I used it for the trip, and I got to use the, you know, little camera button and everything, which I love, but I never needed the battery. Like the case died, right? Because it's like half of the phone's battery, but the phone never got below 50. So the phone never would have died itself. So on the way back from the trip, I returned it. It was like, it, you know, it was, it was, that was a scenario where I would not have wanted to run out of battery, but I never did. So, and then I,
yeah, the Pro Max is pretty solid.
Yeah, which is a great endorsement. I mean, I was never using like low power mode or anything, and I was taking a lot of pictures and transferring pictures from the camera to the phone and that kind of thing. And just never needed to use it. Now I did.
But that's how they justify getting rid of the Lightning port. They just put a camera button where the port is.
I did get in the habit though of using that little camera, like the indention where you squeeze and it takes. It's really cool. Like, I want that on the phone so bad, to where when I was using the phone with no case, I was squeezing that out of instinct. It's like, oh, they need that. Because, you know, you hold it down and if it turns the screen on, I guess it turns the screen on, and it opens the camera app. And it's like a little bit of a delay because it isn't like click open. It's like click hold and open. And then you can start doing your camera thing. But, and so that's one thing. It might be faster to do it another way if your phone's just off, you know, you might be able to get to the phone, the camera faster another way. But if you're in an app and you want to take a picture, I don't think there's a faster way. Like, cause say that you're in Messages, for example, and you want to take a picture, not like the Messages camera, or say you're in Twitter and you want to take a picture or video. And right now what you do is you swipe down to get to the little shortcut for that, or you go to your home screen and do it. Or you go to the lock screen, do the button there, or you swipe from the lock screen. And I loved being able to just press that button, and like whatever app you're in, the camera takes over, you know, and it animates and it pulls you over to the camera. So that was awesome.
Physical camera buttons are good, and a lot of Android phones have them. So
yeah.
And as much as Apple like emphasizes the iPhone as a camera nowadays, it's kind of interesting they haven't done that, but like putting on the smart battery case, like the first step. Probably.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I love the camera button. I don't need the extra battery, the bulk, but got to try that out at least. And while I was gone, while I was on the trip, I wrote a story on Peloton had their Apple Watch app release. You know, this was rumored a few weeks ago. Like Bloomberg had a story that it was in development, or you know, being considered. And I had reviewed the Peloton bike and treadmill. And the digital subscription experience where you can work out with like any, your own stuff, or, you know, do different exercises from your iPhone or iPad or, Mac. And, then on the trip, I saw the story and I was like, this story is like me all over it. So I want to write it. So I wrote it from the phone, you know, and, got to push that out. But I was like literally sending, I was like, we were on the bus tour part of the experience, and we were like right next to the rocket that would be launching the next day. So I was kind of cool to like write that right next to that, you know, it's neat. And then on the day of the rocket launch, it got delayed the first, it was 2 days of the experience. And the first day was like touring, the Kennedy Space Center and like different facilities, like the big, vehicle assembly building, which is just massive. And the ultra wide lens on the iPhone 11 came in such use because like you needed that to get the scope of that building. But that was the first day. The second day there was more touring plus the launch, but then the launch got delayed because of upper wind speeds being too high. And on the third day it was just the next attempt of the launch, and it happened. But I was way better prepared, and I had my camera zoomed in and aimed at the launch pad, like my Sony RX100, for video. And that was recording and captured successfully. And then I was like, well, I've had my iPad in my backpack for like, you know, iPad stuff. It's got a camera. I might as well just capture as much footage from as many sources as possible. So I propped the iPad up and, you know, had it on video, like aiming in the direction to film. And I had the foresight to put that on Do Not Disturb mode so that nothing would interfere with the video capture. And that went really well. And then on the iPhone, I was thinking, well, I'm doing, you know, a camera quality video from a real camera. The iPad is like a backup. And so on the iPhone, I'll be a little bit more creative. And where those are like fixed on the ground pointing at the launch pad, you know, once the rocket is out of view, it's still going to be in the sky. So on the phone, I'll like track it with my hands, you know, and I used the cool app Duet Cam, where you do the front and back. And that's the one that I like. And I did that to film the launch and myself. And it was really cool because it was like, this is my first time seeing a rocket launch like that ever. And it was more exciting than I even expected it to be. And so it was really cool, like filming the rocket launch, tracking it as it goes up into the sky, like past the point of like shooting forward and seeing it. And I never looked at the screen of the phone. I was always looking at the rocket so that I wouldn't miss the real experience. And then I got a phone call and it was like a telemarketer, and it ended my video recording.
Oh no.
And everything on the phone was lost. I was like, I keep waiting for it to come back, but it's not coming back. But
no, it's gone.
Yeah. I didn't care because I did, like, you know, on the camera and the iPad, you can hear me in the background, like, reacting in, like, my pure joy. And it's still, like, the launch, it's in the frame enough that you can, like, watch a 30-second clip and you see the rocket, like, you know, ascending into the sky. But, man, that video, like, that feature where you can film both sides of from the camera, like, that was a perfect scenario, and it was going so well, but I just forgot to do D&D. And that's, like, that's an old feature request of, like, don't prioritize the phone calls. And there's so many things that you can do. You can cancel, or you can mute, you can block callers. So I do that. You can use apps to filter out, you know, telemarketers. I do that. And then you can also do a toggle to have unknown calls from non-context, not even a ring. They just go right to the voicemail from your experience, and then you go and, like, check that. But I can't do that because there's enough numbers that call me for my kids, school, you know, daycare, different things that are different numbers that I can't try. I can't, you know, feel good about that. But I could have done D&D, Do Not Disturb, and that wouldn't have interfered, but it did.
Well, and then a fourth option would be if, you know, iOS was smarter and didn't have to cancel what you were doing just to make the phone call you. I show up.
Yeah, I mean, that's I experienced that problem in, like, 2011. Like, I was, like, filming the ocean in South Florida, and I had a phone call, and, like, I lost the video. And I'm not sure if you do the stock camera app without, like, you know, the special third party Duet Cam app, if the video would have saved or not, or if it was, like, app implementation. But as far as I can tell, the video was gone. Like, nothing that I had recorded.
We'd have to check this, but I think, yes, on the default camera app, it would cut it off at where the call came in, save that.
Yeah, which would have been a really sweet video. Like, that would have been great. But,
yeah.
Oh, well.
But still, like, even in that situation, like, it's one of the most annoying things about the iPhone at the moment is, like, the full screen call UI that interrupts what you're doing, it cancels, you know, recording operations. Right? You could have the option for notifications that just come down at the top, and then you don't actually cancel the video until you accept the call. Like, there's so many things they could do for a, you know, modern smartphone that it's just very antiquated at the moment.
Yeah. So, but luckily I had two other forms of, like, videoing, plus my eyes were fixed on the actual rocket, and, like, not the phone screen. And so when it happened, I was like, oh, you know, but I still had, like, my memories of it from my eyes, and then the two other sources of video I was recording. So
just record a front-facing video of you reacting to nothing, and then superimpose it over the top.
I have a couple of, like, videos from Duet Cam where it's me testing it out, like, up and down, you know, raising my arms as, like, you know, the motion of the rocket would be, just to make sure that, like, that was going to work out okay. And it was great, like, you know. But and that's what – that's a 10S and 11 feature that you can do those front and back cameras, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and 10R.
Yeah, and 10R. Yeah, but not 10. Not 10. Okay.
Not the future phone.
Not the future phone. Just the future phone. Yeah. So that's really cool. I will have I am a little bit behind on, like, what I want to write and what I've managed to get out, but you know, because of all the travel and lack of sleep and everything. But I do want to put up a race recap of the Stennis Space Center Half Marathon, especially, you know, and get those results in there so I can. It's like a long term Apple Watch review of, like, every model, because, you know, you forget this stuff, and when you write it down, then it's, you know, you can go back and look at it, and hopefully in, you know, 5-10 years the numbers are way different in terms of what you can achieve. So and then also, you know, I've got some really cool pictures from the NASA social experience to show.
Yeah, I mean, every time you post a watch like diary post like that, it always reminds me of the Christy Tellington blog that Apple did and the run-up to the first watch coming out.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was so good, but they only ever did it once. Like,
that's right.
I think they could do that as, like, common marketing in the same way that you have Shot an iPhone as, like, a recurring iPhone campaign.
Mm-hmm.
They could have, like, Running with Watch or something, you know, like fitness with watch. And they do some stuff where they have those little like vignettes where they talk to, you know, six or so people every year or whatever, but it's not like a proper blog type situation. I thought the blog thing was really good when they did that.
Yeah, and obviously I keep doing these. Like, if no one read them and there was no reaction, then I would just, you know, write it in my journal or something, but the audience reaction is good enough that you know, it makes me motivated to do more. And then a couple more topics. We hinted last episode that I moved to the 16-inch MacBook Pro. No major surprises there, of course. Nothing revolutionary to say. It has treated me well on this trip. It was the machine. I did use the iPad as like some input stuff, you know, and even the iPhone. Like I wrote that the Peloton Watch app update like from the iPhone entirely. So all the devices in my rotation, but this is now my only Mac. And
so just to clarify, because you change computers so much, you went from iMac Pro and a 13-inch MacBook Pro.
Mm-hmm.
Sold both of them and just got the 16-inch now.
Yeah, yeah. Made some money back too doing that. And this is sort of like, for me, it's like the redemption MacBook Pro, because it's, you know, if you recall, whenever you bought your Mac in 2016, you know, of course you recall, you have it now in front of you. It's the you've got the 15-inch MacBook Pro. What are your specs there?
2.3. I got the base model with upgraded RAM, which at the time it came with 8 gig base RAM, so I got 16 gig RAM.
Yeah.
And then everything else is base model, so I have 256 gig SSD and something like that. And two of my and the perfect butterfly keyboard that has no problems whatsoever at all.
We bought computers at the same time then, and then I've been through a lot since then, of course. But you know, I think it's justifiable as the nature of a semi-tech reviewer. But anyway, at the time I had the 15-inch MacBook Pro, and I spec'd up, I think I went to the higher default config. You know, there's always like,
yeah, you had like 1 terabyte or something.
Yeah, I had the 1 terabyte. It was like $3,000, and then eventually like sold that and got something else when something interests me. I don't know, but I did the iMac Pro for a full year and plus some. That was great. But this is like I've missed that 1 terabyte SSD in a MacBook with power in a big screen since I sold the 2016 model. And now I've got that again. And, you know, I've got the 21.5-inch LG 4K ultrafine display. So as we record the podcast, you know, I've got my microphone and everything set up at the desk. I just clamshell mode that and connect it to the monitor, and then the mic's into the back of the monitor, et cetera. So, it's, I'm not even using like a docking station yet. It's just the monitor is, you know, with its USB-C port in the back is sufficing so far. And for power even. So, that's what I'm doing. And it feels really good to have 1 terabyte SSD again. Could have gone higher, but it was kind of nice to get that same specs as 2016, but with a better processor now. What is it? 8-core i9 now inside?
Yeah.
16 gigabytes of RAM. I'm not sure what I had before, but I'm thinking it was probably 16 at the time then too, maybe. But having 1 terabyte and for a lot less money. I mean, as we discussed in the last episodes, the SSD prices are, you know, you can get more bang for your buck now than you could, you know, 3-4 years ago. So it feels good to have my full photo library there to work with, and plus more. I think I've got about 250 gigabytes of free space, which is like, it feels good to have like a base model, you know, 13-inch MacBook Pro worth of space free, you know.
Yeah, that's my entire SSD.
Right,
free
right.
Space in yours, yeah, to work. And I tell you what, I've been surviving with 256 gigs SSD until like this year, and now this year it's got really, really tight. So I'm definitely getting itchy fingers. Talk about the keyboard situation, right? Mm-hmm. Are you liking the keyboard again?
Yeah. There's, you know, I use the MacBook Air with Touch ID. And one thing I noticed is that because you've got the Touch ID key separate there, so I've used that where Touch ID is its own key, but it feels taller now because it's its own key plus there's more travel. And so it's like a really thick Touch ID key. But I'm happy with the keyboard. It's fine. It's good. The touch bar is there. I like that. If I had the option, I would keep it. I like the escape key. I don't care about the arrow keys, but they work. Like I think if I was customizing it, I would have the other arrow keys. but I don't care enough. If SD card, I love that. I should probably look into seeing if I can make transferring photos and videos from my camera directly to the Mac as easy as it is to iOS, because that's really easy. I like scan a QR code or like bump it in your NFC and then it does the Wi-Fi direct thing. Don't know about that on the Mac. Right now I'm still using the adapter and moving the card around, and that's a pain.
On the keyboard, yeah. How is the backlight in?
Yeah, I showed you some good pictures, I think, of that, of what the 12-inch MacBook especially was like when that was like the first butterfly keyboard with this like really sloppy backlighting where the command key would say com and then the and part would be not backlit because it was just so bad.
Yeah, my 15 inches like that. The com, the CO and the ND of the command word is like dimmed out. It's only lit in the middle.
Yeah.
And you have that on several other keys as well.
It doesn't look like Apple level of quality, but on the new machine, it does. They've sorted it out, which is,
woohoo.
Oh, you know.
It took them three and a half years.
You know, the whole like reliability thing was one thing, and the whole way the keyboard feels is another thing, but like, I don't think a lot of people mention the backlighting sloppiness because it's
and
not...
And the backlighting annoys me every single day.
Yeah, yeah. Because it looks like if it was lit, like in daylight, that you rubbed off the edges of the key.
Yeah, it looks like the ink's coming off.
Uh-huh, yeah. Which it literally would do too on those keyboards. But I think because of heat maybe, but yeah. In that case, it was just like that was the way it was designed and it was never going to get better than that. And they've seemed to do better, I guess.
And you haven't had any keys break yet.
Nope. I've had lunch with my computer and it hasn't broken, which is, you know, an accomplishment, an achievement. So, yeah. One thing is, you know, I was really curious about is to go from 13.3 inches to 16 inches is a big jump. You know, you get a lot more screen real estate and it's the same as if you go from 13.3 to 15.4. But to go from 15.4 to 16, because it isn't like 16 point something, it's 16.0. So it's not a full inch bigger. It's 0.6 inches bigger. It seems to be, I guess, just from like my use that it's the left and right edges, right? That are thinner, like that 10.5 inch iPad that they made.
Yeah.
I don't notice the thinner bezels at the top and the bottom, like in the middle of the screen or just like viewing it. But if you get the cursor or content on either side of the screen, then it does feel like, oh, this is a step forward. This is more modern. It's too bad that you don't get on top and the bottom bezels, but it does feel sleek, you know, and like it ought to be when you're working with content and it's on the edge of the screen. It feels like it needs to. And then the setup experience, because I've tried using like Time Machine Backup and then My Gracious Assistant before, but I've always had an issue where something or another would come up, whether it's like the version of software or the biggest thing has been I'll try to restore from a bigger drive than I'm going into. And so you can't do that, you know, unless you make some decisions about what you're going to save. And this time I was going from the 1 terabyte iMac Pro SSD to the 1 terabyte MacBook Pro SSD. And it's like about 6 hours, but I just left it and came back and it was the easiest setup experience ever. I didn't get a whole bunch of new warnings for like the Catalina stuff. So that was wonderful. There was a lot of software that I had to re-register, even though it was, you know, came over, some settings that were reset, but for the most part, it's been really smooth. Like all my apps are at least installed there and, you know, can be configured. So it's been a smooth experience and to go from a new Mac, a few days before taking a trip like this one and not have that be a factor, you know, that was kind of the ultimate test. It's like, you know, like literally the two Macs that I've been working from are no longer in my possession. I sold those. And so it's all on the new Mac and there was no like, oh no, I've got to set this up or something. You know, it was all really smooth. So, I am enjoying this computer. I do hope that like, in the next 5 years or so, that Apple makes a version of a display that's like a successor to the Thunderbolt display, where it's affordable and looks good. Because I could never afford one of the Thunderbolt ones in the time that it was available, and then whenever I could afford it, it was outdated. And you know, I've had the LG ones; those are not inspiring. And the Apple Pro Display XDR is just enormously out of, yeah, it's too expensive.
And it's not, it's beyond need, right? Because they have to put fans in it, they have to
yeah.
make it thicker because of the insanely high, you know, peak brightness. Mm-hmm. And what we want is just a nice 5K display that, is A, cheaper, but also can be really thin and slim and look nice, right? Like, I want like an iPad Pro, but 27 inches, and don't worry about all the internals. Just give me the screen.
Yeah. Wouldn't have a fan built into it. Like, Yep. So that's the MacBook story for the week. And then you're not doing anything, but I think I'm going to try and talk you into it. So.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. I don't know.
Because what have you got to wait for? Like, you know, maybe there's some spec differences and maybe there's something with the screen type. And, there was quo on some mini LED stuff, but like there's always improvements coming. And eventually, you know, you've got to make the jump.
Yeah, the thing is with iOS devices, I tend to update like on day one or not at all, right? With Macs, I don't have the same kind of pressure. So if like a deal comes up or something, maybe I'd you know, pull it further down the line. I just have some like ingrained resentment to upgrading the computer just because of the keyboard situation and like buying it again because of that. Like, it's just like psychological hatred, right? Of like, I don't want to please Apple just for the fact that they gave me a, you know, mediocre to bad keyboard for the last 3 years. So I've been kind of wearing the laptop out to the point of me like actually outgrowing it, like with the hard drive situation, right? Mm-hmm. And then when I do upgrade again, I can feel happier about it. So that's kind of where I've been.
What model would you get? Color and everything, you know?
I'd probably just get the base model with 1 terabyte,
mm-hmm.
and then space gray probably.
So that's the i7 model with 1 terabyte.
Yeah, or maybe I'd just get the. I'd probably either get the base model upgraded storage or just get the 2799 configuration.
The one that I did. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because back in, I don't know, like the performance is fine. Like I'm not like if I was really struggling for performance, then I'd get like an iMac Pro or something.
Yeah.
So my current holdups with my MacBook Pro today are keyboard and SSD storage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have external SSDs and I have Plex servers and stuff and NASs that I can. And I don't have your issue of where my photo library is not like 200 gigabytes. It's in like 50.
Yeah. So yeah.
I'm happy to replace the laptop when it comes time, but I don't want to be like, I'm only getting rid of this thing because the keyboard sucks, because then I feel like I'm like being fooled into something that I shouldn't be, you know what I mean?
Yeah, if I do have one issue, it is my photo library, where even though I did my Grayson Assistant, I've been in that matching phase where it says uploading for whatever reason, whether it's matching the local copies with the cloud, but it's been...
Yeah, that happens when you update just generally, though.
Yeah.
It just takes forever and it'll get there eventually.
Yeah, I'm at a very...
It's funny you say, like, what are you waiting for? Because we didn't talk about it in like, the rumor section this week, but there was rumors that the 2020 MacBook Pro will be mini LED displays, which also might enable thinner bezel situations as well. So there's always something to wait for if you want to.
Yeah, I was when I saw that report, I was like, come on, Quo. It's ridiculous. Yep. All right. One last thing before we go. We tend to save Apple TV stuff for the very end of the podcast in case you're not interested. But there are a few things to discuss this week. So we'll jump around the order a little bit here. I have seen the season finale of C. I'm now done with C until the next season. I've got to rewatch it. Like, I watched it as soon as it came out, which for me was like 11 p.m. Central time. So it was like before bed. And so it was like the last thing I did. But I kind of want to like rewatch it again. But I mean, I wasn't like mad. You know, sometimes you see a finale and you're like, I wasted my time with that. Like, you know, one closing scene can make you feel like you wasted, you know, the entire viewing time before that.
Yeah.
But I didn't have that. It was obviously, you know, there's going to be season two. And it did feel like this was like half of a season, you know, 8 episodes. Yeah, not.
It is weird that C is 8 and then you've got For All Mankind, Dickinson, and The Morning Show that are all 10. Like, I don't really understand why they ordered only 8 for C, but 10 for the others.
Yeah, I don't know. I was satisfied with where it went, though, because, I mean, without discussing anything specific to the show, we just generally, we had things that we were concerned about that if they don't happen by the end of the season, then what are we doing? And I was satisfied with how everything went.
Yeah, because I'm definitely not as enthusiastic about C as you are.
Yeah.
Right? I'm more negative on it.
Yeah.
I've been watching every episode, though, and I have to say I'm liking it more slowly. I mean, if you could cut off the first 3-4 episodes, I feel like they're getting into a better spot, although there's still some, like, awkward. I hope they have a better show in for season two. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Like, I don't hate it, but I love sci-fi shows like that, like dystopian future stuff. And
yeah.
This is like very middle of the roadish, right?
I will say the last episode, it was the first time where I felt like now I've got to like suspend disbelief. Like this blah 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 is too capable. But
yeah, I might. Maybe I hate it. Maybe I hate it then.
Yeah, I mean, imagine, you know, climax to everything that's been happening so far. But, you know, you'll see it. And then also, Servant, the M. Night Shyamalan series, it debuted on Thanksgiving Day with 3 episodes, and now we're on 4. I've seen 0 so far.
Yeah, I've watched the first 3. I actually really like it. It's
okay, cool.
It's creepy. It's weird. It definitely has scope to be stupid, but... You're gonna have to, like, again, it's one of those things where, like, you're gonna have to wait for when the resolutions start coming in to be like evaluating of whether you think it's just ridiculous or, sure, you know, in line with the myth, the mythology of the story. The first 2 episodes are like captivating, and I've done a lot of research for Servant, obviously a part of, you know, 95 Mac and stuff, and I was very surprised at how it went, even with like the prerequisite information I had. Sure. So
is it creepy or is it like tense or?
Yes, okay. It is very tense. Okay. Yeah,
because that's...
There's very little gore, like there's very little violence, at least in the, you know, at least in what we've seen so far. It's very like psychologically tense, like what's going to happen. You don't really know what's going to happen. The different characters have different interpretations of what's happening. Type of situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like C, which is like, you know, swords and guts and violence.
Big dumb brute, right?
Yeah. It's more like. It's more like The Morning Show, but for, like, horror.
Yeah.
Like, where it's, like, addressing a subject. So, in The Morning Show situation, it'd be, like, sexual misconduct. And here, it's, like, you know, like, psychological situation, essentially. But it's never, like, straight on the nose. It's, like, at least on the first 4 or 3 that I've seen, it's, like, circling around the air. It's really different. I really liked it.
Yeah, I will get to it, but I think I'm going to wait. You know, I've finished C now. I watched all of Dickinson, because that was out all at once, and I quite like that. With Servant, it feels like it's like the last few weeks have been so busy, and you know, things are, I feel like it's like, just to get from the trailer, like it's too tense for what I need to be entertained by right now.
But then, it is definitely like exhausting in that regard, even though they're only like 30 minute episodes, right? You have to like concentrate.
And so once I've exhausted everything that's on TV Plus, which takes no time at all, then I'll have no choice but to check it out. And eventually there'll be a point where I guess there'll be something that it just isn't for me, because there's just enough stuff there, but we're not there yet at all. And then as of today, Truth Be Told is out, which has interesting cast.
It has interesting cast. Whatever you want to think of critical reviews hated it. So
okay,
there you go. They pick critics generally like Servant. But Truth Be Told has not had the same response. So you can take that as what you want and you know, see for yourself.
Okay.
Well. Hala, the movie's also out today, by the way.
Okay.
And then what I think's really stupid is that as of today, if you go onto the coming soon section of Apple TV Plus, it has one thing in it. And the one thing in it is The Banker, the film that may or may not be released.
Oh, no.
So I can't believe they got themselves into this state. They have plenty of content. There is stuff coming out in January. They just haven't announced any of it.
Yeah.
Like, I think they should always be in a situation where they have a couple of active shows, and then you're looking coming soon, and there's like 2 more things coming next month to keep you drawn in. And at the moment, all that's listed is the film that's under contention of not coming out. And they haven't previewed any of the other series. I don't understand how they've got into this mess. Like, if you look at what happened in November, throughout the entire November, you had obviously all the active shows, plus you had the teasers for Hala, Truth Be Told, Servant. They even did the Banker trailer as well in November.
Yeah.
And now we're in December, and they have teased literally nothing of their 2020 slate. It just seems insane.
If you haven't seen the upfront or like read the Apple, you know, .com page on TV, then as far
you
as
think they're done,
as far as
it's, like,
they're
it's
done,
like they're wrapping up shop, like
yeah.
If you just look at that 1.5 minute sizzle trailer they did in March, there's like 7 shows on there that they haven't acknowledged at all in terms of coming out. Mm-hmm. So they have plenty of stuff ready to roll out. They just haven't previewed any more of it. I don't understand why, but it's stupid.
Yeah, and the TV guys, Jamie and Zach, their names, right?
Yep.
They said that they're ahead of schedule for what they... I mean, that's just like, you know, press talk. But that they...
Yeah, they've committed to bringing out new stuff every month, every single month. And so there will be stuff coming out in January, but they should preview it the month before. And so at this point, assuming they don't announce it in the next 2 weeks, which is unlikely because very soon all of Apple goes on like Christmas holiday break, you'll have the finales of... You've already had the finale of C, and you'll soon have the finales of For All Mankind in the Morning Show. And then people will be like, what am I paying for? Well, what is there to watch now? Like, nothing's coming up soon. It seems stupid.
Yeah. Okay, a couple more things. On my trip to NASA, to the Space Center, for the first two nights that were planned, I rented an Airbnb, which is a really nice home. And their smart TV had a Roku stick attached to it. And I searched the app store and found the Apple TV app and installed it and logged in with my phone without like doing the whole password thing on the TV, but like doing it through the web. It's really easy. And for the two nights that I was there, I used the Apple TV app on the Roku stick on the TV. And then when I checked out, I signed out and left the Apple TV app on the Roku stick. But I liked that. It was like having my Apple TV experience at home, but on the road without plugging in, you know, an Apple TV or something. That was really cool. The third night that, you know, because the rocket launch was delayed by a day, then I just watched, I had a hotel room that night and it was not that nice. And I just watched on my Mac, but, you know, which was also pretty good. But it was neat to be able to go into just an Airbnb home rental and have the Apple TV app. It, you know, it wasn't already there, but I could go and get it, sign in, use it, sign out, leave it installed. You know, that's possible now.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yep. And then the last thing I'll say, this isn't spoilery for C, but if you're sensitive to it, maybe it is. I don't know. But you know the opening music to C? It's a nice touch that I think in the last episode they wrapped. It feels like a nice, like, you know, put a bow on the season that I've got to rewatch it and see. But I think that the opening scene, or, you know, like theme music, those sounds are like literally parts of the scenes of like the big finale.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Which felt like a neat touch. It's not a spoiler.
Neat, like throwback and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And then that the music started feeling more like '80s, Stranger Things. Like when you get into like the episode's over now, like, and it felt like a different shift, you know. So that. I think they're doing something. They can rely heavily on sound, and like they don't overdo it. But in those two moments, I felt like they're acknowledging the whole like eight episodes of the theme. It was this scene, and then season two, you know, it's gonna come, and they're gonna enter. You know, the sound of the show changed. If I felt like, and that it was like representative of like I guess the storytelling too.
But, that's an interesting touch.
Yeah, not a spoiler. All right, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. For me, at least, I'm at Apollo Zach Benjamin. You're on Twitter at
BZA Mayo.
I was thinking yesterday, as I was driving for way too long, that if we podcasted in the 2000s, instead of saying Twitter and Instagram at Apollo Zach for me, I would say maybe like Zanga and MySpace at Cal Moo Pig Oink. That was my
That's
my only username. Yep. I need a rest. You can email us any feedback you have at happyhour@9to5mac.com. If you enjoy the show, please share it with a friend. You can rate us in Apple Podcast or recommend us in Overcast. That will help more people discover the show. And we will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.